Can you talk more about some of the connections you've had while working on like portraits or through talking to students and things like that?
Some of the connections. Let's see. That's an interesting question. I mean, at SUNY Oneonta, I did speak with several classes. They were all art classes. I wanted to connect with other departments, but it just didn't work out. People, I guess, have a syllabus set up and they don't. I mean, I thought, God, I'm a living artist. I'm on site. Come on, bring your students, you know. So that was a connection that I sort of failed in, I felt like. I wasn't able to get traction with other departments, you know. Let's see. I don't know, that's an interesting question because sometimes the connections are last sort of while I'm on site and then it's over with. But any connections that I make with artists, sometimes those live on because we help each other connect, you know, and somebody will say. Like the show I'm going next month, I'll take the work to Time and Space Limited in Hudson. And the women who run that, it's an art center, they do films, they do the HD opera programs. They also, you know, they do a lot in the neighborhood. There's a Bangladeshi population there. They do a lot of things. They have lots of children's classes, and they invite children, all the children, whatever. You know, there are lots of races and ethnicities there, and they're so great with the kids, you know. I know because my daughter worked there one summer, and so I saw it from that point of view, because I've never really worked with the kids there. So that's something I will be talking to them about, is how can I get those kids, and even if they're little, I'll just change the talk so that I engage the littler ones too, because there are all sorts of great stories about the suffragists. So I guess that's to answer that question.
I'm really interested in hearing more about your thoughts. Earlier, you mentioned kind of the surprise reaction when they found out you were working on kind of pieces of art for different like ethnic groups. I'm wondering kind of how you felt about that when people asked you about that and.
I thought it was how I felt about people asking me about, like, yeah, the Chicano question. I thought, wow, you know. I thought maybe it was just this me as a white person. Also, I don't think the guy knew how old I was either. He was a kid. He was like my son's age. I had my sunglasses on, a hat, you know. He called me a Chicano chick, you know. And I thought, so there's that thing too about age, you know, like different age groups. I think it's important to mix age groups and races and ethnicities. And so I don't know, maybe that was something for him where he, you know, he saw things a little differently. So I don't know. I mean, I do, it's funny because I wondered if Marco Martin, as the owner, if he got some kind of negative reaction from the community, because I asked him the following year if we could also get together and write a grant, and I never heard from him. And he's on Facebook too, and so I see him. So it's not like he died or, you know, fell off the side of the earth. And I thought maybe he's, you know, maybe there's some kind of backlash that, you know, the community saying, you know, next time, please, can you just put a Hispanic Chicano person in there? And I don't blame him either, because he said to me, you know, in the 70s, he said, this is his words, he said, we were the niggers in Denver. There were very few blacks, but he said the Hispanics were treated terribly, you know, stopped by the police the way that blacks are now. And they've worked so hard to make a place for themselves. And Marco Martinez, I mean, he was born in this country, you know, mother was Native American. His father was from Mexico, but he was born here. I mean, he's as American as any of us. And so, I mean, and it's just sort of heartbreaking, you know, to know how they were treated. I mean, my God, you know. So I just feel like sometimes I see, like, you know, I don't blame people for wanting to have their own groups. Like, you know, when there was the open house for the mural, I mean, all of Marco's relatives came, and, you know, they all have businesses, and they all go to each other's businesses. And, I mean, why shouldn't they do that? I mean, they've been treated horribly, and they need to be together, and they need to succeed, and they want their kids to succeed. And so you know, it's just, that's really interesting. So I'm just standing here, you know, as this white person, you know, and it's just, again, it's like by chance, you know. I mean, I know that one of my great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers was, quote-unquote, given a Native American woman to marry, a young woman, and there was some kind of a trade because my ancestor helped the Native American chief with something, and he was so grateful that he offered his two daughters to the two sons of my ancestor, and that's how, you know, that happened. And but if that's gone, that, you know, that sort of you know, the link to that ancestor is so tenuous, you know. There's one picture of this woman, but now there's talk that maybe it was another line of the family, so the story may not even be right. So but my feeling about, like, world peace is that I think it's so important that we know other people. And I know it's difficult in Cooperstown because it is so homogeneous, but that we know about other kinds of people, we have other kinds of friends, or we open ourselves up, or we and that people marry other races or other people from other countries or other religions. I think that's the only hope. Because it's like gays. Like, I think that's why the gay you know, the gays have been so embraced by the country, because everybody has a few gay people in their family, and we all love them. And so when it came time for the Supreme Court to discuss gay marriage, I mean, like, everybody's, oh yeah, you know, I love my cousin, I want him to be able to marry his partner who he's been with for 20 years, you know. So I don't know how to speed that up, because it almost feels like it's sometimes people close down more. Like right now, at this time in history, people have closed down and are sort of pulling back and becoming more tribal. But I don't like that at all. I feel like it's like, oh man, we got to go the other direction. So anyway, that went way off your question, I'm sure. But anyway, that's just how I feel, and about that.
Yeah, no, that actually, I was thinking about asking you too how you think that we should, like, approach becoming more open and inclusive and encouraging kind of multicultural, like, interactions and things like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like doing art projects together with kids, and if you can, I don't know if it's a neighborhood. I know that in Hudson, the neighborhood has, like, all the Bangladesh kids, the black kids, I've sort of forgotten. I remember when my daughter was working there, she said, this one little girl ran up and said, well, where is Trudy? And the other little girl said, well, what color is she? I don't know Trudy, but what color is she? You know, like, because there were all the shades of dark, I don't know, all colors, you know. And I thought, that is so great, you know, like, it's not like, oh, she's the Hispanic kid or she's the black kid. It's like, oh, it's just, like, what color's her hair? But let's say, like, it was referring to her skin. It was great, you know, it's like, it was like it didn't matter as a group. I mean, she had her own color, you know, whatever. It was mix of whatever. And I thought, well, that's the way it should be, like, the individual. So I'm thinking maybe when I'm in Hudson, I can work with the kids. And so, but I think they do that already because they invite the neighborhood kids and they get the mix. But I think it's more difficult when there's a segregated, the areas are segregated. So I'm not sure. I don't really know about that other than getting out art out on the street and having a group or getting the kids to actually take part in a mural out on the street. And if they're neighborhood kids or you bring kids in who are from different areas of the world, and then just everybody's working next to each other. You know? That's the way to do it, I think. You know, one kid next to another. And they all see, oh yeah, this is not as easy, or this is really easy, you know, or watch out, you might spill something, or I'll clean it up for you, or, you know, that sort of thing. You know, because people are just people. That's what I feel, and it's it's just heartbreaking when things break down, and there are wars. I mean, why? You know, I guess it's about resources and maybe climate change now. But man, so the question is too: how can I, as an individual in Cooperstown, do anything about any of that? You know, so. I know it's a rhetorical question.
Do you take kind of that question in consideration when you think about your next art subject or designer?
Yeah, that's a good question because, you know, how does the next project come? Because stuff is sort of organic for me almost, especially these issues of war and social justice, and because something will hit me. Like when I was doing a show at Emma Willard School in Troy, and I had decided to show some of my older installations, so I rebuilt some of them and then put pictures, photographs in of what it actually looked like when it was complete, and then the director, because it was basically, the gallery you had to walk through it to get to the library. So that was great. So people were seeing me work. But then the director of the libraries, the gallery said, there's also all of this, there's a hallway that turns left off this gallery that goes to the tunnel that goes to the cafeteria. So the girls, when the weather is bad, the students, they were all female students, could walk into the tunnel to get to the cafeteria. And he said, that you could use all that too. And at the same moment the same week, I saw a photograph in the New Yorker of a young woman whose leg, she had no leg because it had been blown off in the Iraq War. It was the early days of the second, not the Gulf War, but the Iraq War after George Bush became president, or was president. And I saw this young woman, and I thought, oh my God, this could be my daughter. It's just like this visceral feeling. So from that, I made an installation about the Iraq War, and it was somewhat abstract because there were these cloth figures that were 5 to 6 feet high hanging. They looked dead or limp, and it was called America Comes Home, and it was about people coming home dead or maimed. So that's how that project came about. And then there were two more installations that about the war, one about Iraqi children and how did they survive in the war. And, you know, there were no photographs of them. We weren't allowed to see what was happening with Iraqi children because it was, they didn't want it. Because I think if a child with a bandage, I found little like thumbnail photographs on the internet, but if that some of those photographs had been on the front page of the Times, I think it would have really made a difference to the war. It might have helped bring it to an end, you know. So, I described how I came to the refugee mural and the suffrage work. I was in the fall. You know, Hillary Clinton was vying for the presidency, and I just thought, it was in October, and I thought, wow, there must be so many women who have helped to get her to that point, and I'm sure there are people we don't know. I mean, there are hundreds of people who have worked we don't know who they are, and they're sort of heroes. And that's how I got involved with the suffragists. I started digging into that, and then I realized it was the centennial, the 100th anniversary of 2017, of us getting the vote in this state. So that's how that project came about. And I'm thinking now that there were so many women I wasn't able to draw. I started to draw. I did draw in the early stages before I really, the project coalesced into New York State suffragists, that I think I'm going to start working on the women who were really important to getting the 19th Amendment passed and ratified. And I know a lot of these women I've done overlap into that group too, because they just kept right on working. But I'm hoping to, find other women that I wanted to, because they're, you know, they were everywhere, every tiny village and hamlet. And I also would like to think about the history of why did Colorado get the vote like decades before we did here. And I sort of superficially know that, you know, some of those western states, Wyoming, they were a territory. They didn't have the number. They needed a certain threshold, number threshold, to become a state. So they gave women the vote maybe as a way to get them out there, because they had the, I don't know, the ratio was one woman to six men. And they needed women, you know, to be, you know, to make families with the men. And so they gave them the vote. And I'm jealous. I was like in the 1870s. It's amazing. Because sometimes back, you know, we sort of feel, we were in the forefront in terms of the 1848 Seneca Falls Convention, and there's so much here that happened for suffrage. But to think that those states out there were, those women were voting, it's like, wow, unbelievable. So I want to dig into that. So that's where my work will go next. There were these, as I say, these visceral things that happen to me, that, and that sometimes creates a direction.
Oh, yeah, that's super interesting. Earlier, or last time we talked, last week, you also mentioned your kind of involvement in kind of activist groups, I think, especially in Colorado. I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit more.
In Colorado, I wasn't involved because we weren't there for long enough. And to be an activist, I think you have to sort of be in the community. And, after Trump was elected, there were so many, not elected, but inaugurated, there were so many things happening around here for the lectures about environmental issues, that we need to look at this, and rallies and marches. And so I saw all this stuff on my coming in email, and then there were four activist groups that started, Positive Action Cooperstown, and there's one in Cherry Valley. And so I joined those on Facebook. They're closed groups. You have to be okayed to be a member. And so I started an activist calendar, I call it, and I just collated the various events that I saw coming at me from different sources. And I just do that every Sunday. It comes out Monday, and I have a listserv. I have those four Facebook pages, and then there is a Sustainable Otsego listserv. I give it to their listserv, so it goes out to, I don't know who sees that, but this is week 43. It's like, I'm thinking, oh, because sometimes it's like this deadline, you know, and I've had a lot of shows this year. It's been a lot of deadlines. It's like, whoa. And then we had this huge Thanksgiving with 15 people here from all over the country in Vienna, Austria. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm so upset about what's happening that that fuels me. I'm, you know, okay, so what? You had all these people for Thanksgiving, and the house is sort of chaotic, and they're still here. You have to just keep going for my activist calendar. And the suffragists were such role models. Like, just keep going. When they lost the 1915 vote in the New York State Legislature, they were convinced they were going to get the vote that year. And they didn't. And this one of them said, we're not falling back, we're falling forward. So in 2 years, they got the vote. They got the New York State Legislature to vote for it. Women to have the vote. So I just think, you know, just keep going. And now I was thinking maybe there'll be a break this week even, because this week I said, no activist calendar this week. It's Happy Thanksgiving. And then a couple of people wrote, well, don't forget, you know, next Wednesday, a week from Wednesday, after this is going on. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, so people really, you know, people do seem to like it. And I know, I mean, what I expect is that people just, if they're real busy, delete it, you know, because you can't follow all this stuff all the time. But once in a while, there are some people who say they follow it, they read it. And I always have something at the end, like some little thing, like special, either to do, to call, or a book to read, that, like On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder. That's a great book about things we can do, simple things we can do right now to keep the country from drifting into fascism. And it's about community engagement, a lot of it, being involved politically, you know, on the local level, being, you know, going to lectures or the library, films or whatever, just being out, you know. And it's easy here, I feel, because we're a cohesive community. And I think it's easier than, I know people who are in cities. A friend is in LA. I mean, it's hard for her. She's sort of isolated in a way in her own little bubble. It's hard for her to kind of get traction. But there are local groups, you know, like our local, my address is Cooperstown, but I live in the town of Middlefield, which is the township, I think you call it. So we got, the activists got somebody elected for our town council by a write-in vote. So that was amazing. We really worked for that. So, and actually marked it more than I did because I was so busy with the suffrage stuff, but he was doing envelopes and, you know, stamping stuff. So, that's how that calendar came about. So I'm going to reassess when it's week 52. Mm-hmm. And, but I'm in my 43rd week, and it doesn't totally correspond to Trump, because after Trump was inaugurated, I think for 10 days I did, I blasted out something to do, who to call our congressman fast. So, and then after that I thought, wow, I can't keep this pace up, something every day, because I like to research. If I put something on the calendar, I want to have the full address and phone numbers, and so people, I don't like to have any errors. You know, so I'm sort of compulsive about that. Anyway, so that's the whole thing about what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, can you elaborate a little bit more on some of the projects or activities that you guys are working on with those groups or focusing on?
We focus on getting local people elected. So there was a huge amount of activity before, you know, the elections, because there are all these different groups, and now we'll be working toward the 2018 election. And Congressman Faso has his congressional district, it looks like an octopus, so it goes from here, we're sort of the western edge or the western arm of it, and some arms go north, some arms go down the Hudson. So that's what we're really working on now. I just saw stuff. I tried not to do any email over the holiday, and you know, there was too much going on anyway, but Thanksgiving, but I saw a couple of things coming through, like about next week, and we're going to have meet and greets for the people who have already declared they're running against FASO, so that these things are happening. So people aren't letting up, which is good. You know, there's no break between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And when we had this great election night crowd gather at the shack out on Route 28. And Richard Sternberg, who has been instrumental in getting everybody going, he's a retired physician. And he said, okay, great. He stood up and he said, okay, you guys, this is exciting. We've made some progress, but tomorrow it's back to work. And he said, just remember, it's like the Macy's Day Parade. The day after the parade, they're talking about what balloons are going to be in it next year. So I thought that was great, you know, because it's like, okay, yeah, break for a minute. And then, and there's another group I'm involved with. It's called Cooperstown Gives, and it's just a loose group of people who, and it hasn't gotten any bigger. It's like 25 people who get together once a month at the Stagecoach Coffee, and 7:30 to 8:30, last Tuesday of the month, and we choose the month before which group we want to give. We chip in for whatever group. So we have, it's either women's rights, it's environmental, or it's I think the other category is like refugee issues. So we just, and people bring up groups that they would like to support, and we chip in. You chip in whatever you want. And so that group, actually we're having a little party this week coming up to celebrate the year, but that's the night of, we're starting a Middlefield caucus that night, which I don't totally understand, but the caucus, I guess, is a group of people that will know what offices are open, and we need to put these people up ahead of time and not get to the point where we're doing a write-in candidacy, because that's way too cumbersome. So that's the idea of that. That we'll be sort of looking forward and not just picking up running to get caught up. That we'll be ready for whatever elections come up, you know. So that's sort of exciting. But that's the same night as Cooperstown Gives Celebration, but it's okay, you know, it's okay.
You gotta find like a balance between.
Yeah, right.
I think we are running towards the end of our time.
Okay.
But I guess kind of like more of a final wrap-up question. I guess, how do you think attitudes towards social issues have changed over the years?
It's interesting because when I was in college in the 70s, like the first Earth Day was 1970, and I thought, oh, this is so great. And, you know, we were fighting the Vietnam War, but I thought things were just going to go up. Ka-chink, 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 up, up, up. Like, people would get more freedoms, more rights, and responsibilities with those rights, you know. But it feels like this is a time of backlash to that era. Like, I mean, it's been coming, you know. And this is sort of like, whoa, you know. So I feel like I like the idea of progress in these things, but I feel that some people are threatened by that idea that everybody would have health care, and I don't know what that problem is, but wealthy, really, really wealthy people do not want to pay for people who are underprivileged, and there's this zeitgeist now about if somebody's poor, it's their fault, quote-unquote, and I feel like that is like, where did that come from? That is horrible. That is so horrible. And so I just feel like I'm a little discouraged. I'm a lot discouraged. But I just, like, I put my head down and just do the suffrage work and do the local stuff and hope that things will change, you know, and there'll be a turn, like the ship will turn, but it's going to be, you know, ship. It's hard to turn a ship. It's going to take some time. So, but anyway, I just feel optimistic. And I feel like I'm really worried about my kids, you know, like the gun issue. Like, I don't, you know, like, if I get shot, I've had a great life, you know. I mean, I've had all sorts of problems, this and that. But basically, on balance, I'm just worried about them. I don't want, my son's in Colorado. I worry about the gun laws out there. And my daughter's in Washington, D.C. I guess they're pretty good there. And, but I just, that's what I'm worried about, is the next generation. So, and I'm trying to, I don't want to be a crabby old lady. I want to be generous to, like, young women. Because when I was young, and sometimes people can be nasty, women. And I just feel like, I don't want to be like, I want to be nice to people. I want to try to nurture young people, young women, and let them know that they can do what they need to do or what they want to do. And things are open for them, and just all you have to do is set your goal and work on it and try to find friends who support you and don't try to pull you down. And so that's also a goal. I want to be like a generous person as I get older. And I don't know, maybe if people get in pain or something, maybe they have to be crabby. But I would just like to be generous as I get older, generous to young women.
Do you feel that you try to reflect this through your artwork?
When I speak about it, I think, you know, that's what I try to do. I try to open up the question, take any question, and then try to get, yeah, I got a couple of Cornell students to come to the lecture in Ithaca, but I really wanted more people, you know. And I met that woman here through a friend whose father lives in Ithaca. I mean,